You wouldn't invest in opening a restaurant and when the owner of the property gets to decide each morning whether or not you have the keys to the restaurant. That's what it's like on these platforms right now. People need to be able to run businesses that get paid for content and pull things together, and they need to be able to do it in such a way that they can trust that they own their relationship to their followers, they own their name, they own their content in the network ongoing, because that lets us invest in it. We have all these systems that build up. We don't design the complicated system from the top down. We build the top complicated system out from small parts that emerge. And Nostr is designed like that. And that's why I'm building on top of Nostr. And that's why I believe in it, because Nostr is designed in the way and being built in the way that we know for the last 50 years works. It works for building the internet. It worked for building the web. It worked for building things like podcasting. And it will work for building social media apps.
Hello, friends. Welcome back to the podcast. We have a wonderful episode for you today. We've been really getting into the Nostr weeds lately, and I just want to bring more people on who are part of this very exciting project that we are seeing grow. It seems like every episode I do, there's just so much that has happened since the last one. It's just moving so quickly. So very excited to have with me today, Rabble. Thank you for coming on.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me. I'm excited to be here and talk about Nostr and how we got to the world of social media and protocols we have today.
Absolutely. So you have a very cool story. I know that lots of the Nostr folks know your story and where you came from and why you're extremely relevant. You've been a very big part of some very important projects in the social media world, biggest one being Twitter. So I would love to hear just your backstory, maybe starting with the origins of becoming interested in both software development and social communities, social media, and just how you got started in this whole thing.
Yeah, that's a fascinating question. I've always been very interested in technology and software, and also how do we use technology to change the world. And when I started as a programmer building social software, it was pre-web. So in the early 1990s, before there was widely accessible websites, we had networks of BBSs that had actual peer-to-peer networks. FidoNet was the biggest one. And so I was very excited about that, and I thought that that was a way to connect people together. And then when the web came along, I was like, oh, this is amazing. Now we can make all of these, you know, websites. And then we got the ability to make CGIs and make them dynamic and program the web. And I actually dropped out of college in the late 1990s to do a SaaS calendaring startup and build calendar software for local groups and social change. And I kept thinking, how do we use this technology to make the world a better place? And so that work got me involved with this network called Indie Media that I helped start and grow, which was pre-social media activist stuff. And so we did the first live stream of a protest in 1999 from the streets at the Seattle WTO protest. And we built the ability for you to upload photos and video and live stream. And we set up pirate television stations because it wasn't all digital. And I spent 4 years from 1999 to 2004 traveling around the world, building out computer systems and building out computer labs and helping people publish their own stories all over the world, Latin America, Asia, Europe, North America. And in 2004, I got in touch with Evan Williams, who had been working on Blogger, and found out that he was working on a project to do podcasting, sort of take podcasting from this hacker side project to this mainstream thing. And that's the company that became ODEO, and the, you know, I go by the name Rabble because of the initial three people in the company, there were two Evans, and it got really confusing. And so Evan Williams goes by Ev, and I'd use Rabble in my activist stuff online. So I just ended up getting stuck with the name Rabble, and neither one of us got at Evan on Twitter. But I've been very interested in sort of how do we create media for empowering people to change the world so that we can democratize who has access. Because in the 1990s and before that, you had free speech for anyone who was able to own a printing press. You know, free speech if you could get a license and put up a radio tower and do broadcasts. That's not really free. It's, you know, and so with this internet, we're like, oh my God, we can use this to democratize the media, and we can collaborate, and we can make everything else. And that is what got us super excited about blogging. That's what got us super excited about podcasting. And the ODEO company, we built this whole podcasting platform. We built this tool for creating podcasts and discovering podcasts and sharing podcasts and listening to them. And at ODEO was where we hired Jack Dorsey as a senior developer building on this platform. And we went up against Apple. And Apple just like their end-to-end integration with iTunes and the iPod. This is, of course, before the iPhone. It made the experience of listening to podcasts so much better than we could do just with the desktop and web app. So we then said, oh, shit, we need to figure out something else. And myself and a couple other people had been experimenting with text messages. Like, how do we send text messages? And we've done it for activism purposes. Like, we had used it in 2004 so that people outside the Republican National Convention in New York could find out where the protest was and what was going on with the police. And sort of we sent out thousands of these little status-like updates to people in all these groups. And it was a little more group-focused, and it wasn't quite smooth, and it was hard to sign up for it, but it showed us there was something there. And so when ODEO realized, as a company, we realized that we weren't going to win with with podcasting, we said, well, what else could we build? And we started this sort of brainstorm of ideas where we're saying, okay, what in the emerging smartphone era, the emerging area of telephony, of being able to hack on things, being able to make these things, what can we do that was like things in the past? You know, what if blogging were easier and faster and directly on your phone? What if you could just know the status of everything? What if you could collaborate? What if you could send these text messages? And we just pulled together the team and kept doing these hackathons where we built these prototypes. And that idea of how do we adapt to this new thing, that's what created Twitter. And so the original company was founded in 2004. We actually launched Twitter in 2006. And it didn't feel like it was going to change the world. Like, it felt too nerdy, too geeky, too hard to use. There were too many codes, and it's only text-based, and you couldn't see it. But it was a really open platform because we built it on Ruby on Rails. There was this sort of RESTful web API that came with it from scratch. Like, it just worked. And so the initial Twitter API was generally just like, oh, the Rails stuff lets us do anything you can do in the web via an app. Great. And it was like a one-page wiki page of like, this is what the API looks like. And it took off. People loved building on top of it. And so the amazing thing of those early days of Twitter was how much the innovation did not happen in the company. The company's role was to sort of foster the environment of innovation and foster the environment of collaboration. But the actual innovation that was going on was all of the users, all of this developer community. And so even though it wasn't a protocol, it felt like a protocol. It, you know, you didn't have to ask for permission to build your own Twitter app because users were just putting in their usernames and passwords, and it just worked. And so at replies, hashtags, searches, trending topics, retweets, short links, inline images, inline video, tweet streams. Everything we think of as Twitter was not created by Twitter, the company. It was created by Twitter, the user base, the developers, this larger community. And I thought that was great. I had actually, I left in mid-2006 after Twitter was launched, went over to work with Yahoo on the Flickr team and bounced around bunch projects. But Twitter through 2006 to 2012 was this very open space. There was the Twitter developer conferences, there was the APIs, there was a thing called annotations that let you send tweets that weren't visually visible. They were just JSON objects that went in your tweet stream. So it was super neat. And then there was a clash of markets, which is like Twitter had taken so much money from investors, so much money from venture capital, and there was no business model. And so Dick Costello, the CEO at the time, was like, oh, I know, we'll just bring everything in-house and, control the experience so we can run ads. And Twitter, that was the moment Twitter lost its first openness. And so the Fediverse and ActivityPub, which is the protocol that Mastodon uses, it all comes from that moment in 2012 when Twitter shut down its open ecosystem. And they're like, well, what if we had a federated Twitter? And the irony is that federated Twitter had already existed. We had built a federated Twitter in 2007 using the Jabber protocol, XMPP, and it didn't scale. But at the time, webhooks didn't exist. PubSub didn't exist over HTTP. Activity streams didn't exist. ActivityPub, none of the things that make social media protocols today work existed when we tried to make Twitter into a social media protocol in 2007. So the crazy thing is, even though Twitter lost its openness and its innovation, it was still a gathering place. It still grew in importance and did a pretty good job of cultivating it, but it did a better job of cultivating that space and the Twitter sphere and the public sphere than it did making money. Because Twitter never interrupted you with a video ad or anything else. They're like, the only ads are these paid promoted tweets, which didn't work very well. So from 2012, I was like, oh shit, we lost the thing that made Twitter interesting. We need a protocol. And I kept trying to build protocols. I tried to build one on Ethereum with smart contracts and one thing called ZeroNet and directly on BitTorrent and, using the DHT and on IPFS and all these different things like that, all these different attempts to build it. Because I wanted a permissionless protocol, not just for social media publication, but I wanted the protocol that let developers build their own things, let people not be able to be sharecroppers on someone else's platform, where the rug could be pulled. Because from the period of 2005, 2006 to 2012 was a period of tremendous innovation and openness when it came to the social web. If you think back Zynga with Farmville and the Facebook apps, you had this whole space where people were building amazing shit. And you didn't have to go ask Zuckerberg if I wanted to build this app on top of the Facebook graph. And then Facebook and Twitter and everybody else is like, fuck the innovation. Let's just make a lot of money and sell people ads. And so we had this Cambrian explosion of anybody could build whatever social thing they wanted. Then from 2012 to 2016 or so, it all got enclosed. And people are like, yeah, but it's really beautiful and it works really well and they keep the servers up. And then the election happened in 2016 and people are like, oh shit, we've given a few guys control over the entire public sphere of politics. And that's problematic that there's one algorithm. It doesn't matter how good a person Jack Dorsey or Mark Zuckerberg or Evan Spiegel or all the other folks like Adam Mosseri, who now runs Instagram, or Kevin Systrom, who is the founder. It doesn't matter how good they all are. The idea that we should have one guy be in charge of deciding what isn't acceptable speech is insane. And so we knew that it was going to be a problem before it became a problem. But the rest of the world didn't understand until 2016. So that happens. Mastodon comes along and makes ActivityPub in the Fediverse really easy. It's like this Rails app. Twitter was a Rails app. Super simple. Timelines, login, local timelines, discovery, usernames. It sort of pulls it all together as this alternative that stays in this teeny thing. And then there's other protocols that are like, there's like 100 of them. Everybody's like, oh my God, I'm going to invent a social media protocol. But there was one protocol in there called Secure Scuttlebutt. It was made by this like hacker, Dominic Tarr, who's an incredibly productive JavaScript developer. He's released 450 NPM libraries. Like everybody uses Dominic's code all the time. He's super, super productive. He lives on a sailboat off the coast of New Zealand. And he doesn't have internet connections. And so he's like, I'm going to make a social media protocol that works for me on my sailboat. I'm just going to throw out everything we've known and rethink it and like learn some stuff from crypto and learn some stuff from like the blockchain world and learn some stuff from distributed networks and mixed nets and everything, pour it all together. And I'm going to make this protocol just so I can talk to my friends while I'm on my sailboat. And I don't have my connection. So that's Secure Scuttlebutt, which never takes off. Never gets more than a few thousand users. But it's incredibly influential in the ideas of how people are building social media protocols. So it's a radical departure. It isn't trying to make like a federated city-state version of Twitter, which is what the Fediverse and Mastodon are. This Scuttlebutt thing is just like, oh, now we can have a whole bunch of applications. We have gaming applications, and we can have blogging applications, and we can have collaborative documents. We can do all sorts of stuff. And it was funky. Like, Scuttlebutt is hard to use. It was slow, everything else. But Fiat Joff, this Brazilian Bitcoin developer, sees Scuttlebutt, and he's like, what if we just change it a little bit? Like, there's some, like, stupid stuff in here. But like 99% of it is the right thing. But like Scuttlebutt had this like signed log thing that meant using the same identity on your desktop and your mobile phone didn't work very well. And you couldn't delete. You had to have the whole history of everybody's contacts like from the beginning to make posts. It was slow. But it gave us the nugget idea. And so what we see now with the emerging social protocols are all derived from this one weird protocol called Secure Scuttlebutt. And so Lens, Farcaster, Noster, Blue Sky, this weird thing called DSNP from Project Liberty, everybody's ideas are all based on this Secure Scuttlebutt thing, which gave us like a new way of thinking about social protocols, where we're going to invert this power dynamic that we had created with OAuth and Twitter and Facebook and everything else, where the platforms controlled all your data, they protected your privacy, not very well. And then the developers end up being just like sharecroppers in these giant cloud capital marketplaces that they could decide, well, you know, your app disappears. Or today we're going to take 20% and tomorrow we're going to take 30% of your revenue. And that's the reality that exists with Google Play and the Apple App Store and Facebook and all these big social platforms. Is you can build stuff. Like you can build your extensions for Shopify. But if Shopify doesn't like you, they can just remove you and you don't have any say. And oddly enough, it's like not having property rights. We don't have any rights. We do business on Instagram and Twitter and Facebook and everything else. We put our businesses on there. That's our lead generation. It's our social. It's our it's everything. And yet we don't own our name. We don't, like, you can download your own content, but you lose your place in the world. You lose your followers. And that's no way to run a society. That's no way to run an economy. And once Facebook really shut down their open app ecosystem, 2010, 2012, all of a sudden, no one would invest in social apps. because you could have the rug pulled out from under you any moment. But the amazing thing is we see with Noster and the other social protocols is we don't have that problem anymore. Like, I can now use a blogging app and I can use a music streaming app and I can use a live streaming app and I can use a microblogging app for like tweet-like messages and I can do video games and I can do collaborative document editing. And it's my identity that's choosing to work with these apps. So it totally flips the power dynamic that we had with the existing centralized web 2.0 platforms. Now, those platforms were like, I helped invent them. Like, we made them to be open. But what happened was, like, there was the, like, the ring of power in there, which is like billions of dollars. If you just control the whole experience and convert this entire social space to just be about passive consumption and clicking on those damn ads, you make so much money on the ads that you don't care. And so I'm super excited about Noster, not because it's great that it has censorship resistance and you get to say and everything else, but it's also, it's a commons. Like it's a space by which we're doing business that isn't owned by one corporation or one government. It's created by all the participants. And that's like a really powerful inversion of the way it works. And it means that when you're using Noster, and to some extent the other social protocols, the whole space of them, you own your relationship to other people, you own your data, you then choose which applications build off of your data. And so I don't have to ask for permission to build a new Noster app. And you as a user in Noster don't have to ask for permission to use your same contacts from the social blogging app to your music streaming app, to your live streaming app, to your collaborative document editing app, to your spreadsheet app. There's a spreadsheet thing in Noster, which is like Google Sheets, but collaborative and decentralized using your own data. Like, no one can turn you off either as an app developer or user. Now, if you do inappropriate things with content, the people who run these relay servers, they can be like, I don't want to host your content. You're a spammer or you're posting abusive material. I'm going to cut you out of my portion of the network. But you're not cutting them out of the entirety of the internet or the entirety of the social web. And that, to me, is the really powerful thing, which is like, it can be space where we can invest. It can be space where we can build, and it can be square where we're not going to have a random algorithm change mess with us. You know, we think of these big tech platforms as being respectable, but you know, a few years ago, Facebook decided that they weighed way more money via videos than text. And they're like, we want videos. We make so much money on videos. You know what they did? They went to all the newspapers and the media publishers and they said, look at how important video is. And then when if you were a newspaper and you uploaded a video, they lied about the viewer numbers. They just put really high numbers to say, oh, if you post an article, you get 10,000 people viewing it. But if you post a video, it's 1 million. 1 million people did not watch this. Like, this is well known. Like, Facebook just lied. They went and then they convinced the whole entire media industry to shift how they're building stuff and got them to do these things, pushed all these like platforms that drive the ads. And then they're like, oh, turns out no one was really watching your videos. But now users like watching videos and they click on those ads. So we can't trust these things. And it's not like we should somehow trust myself or Fiat Joff or Jay, who's over the CEO of Blue Sky, or Yugen, who created Mastodon, or Jack Dorsey. Like, the entire point of what we should be thinking about is we need to build a world where we stop looking for heroes who will save us. And that's really important to think about. Like, Noster's not like you know, Nasser is not dependent on one person. There's no point of control in the same way. And a community of people can get together and set norms and define how it's going to work and design the standards. But that inability to have central control is critical to creating a healthier media ecosystem, because it doesn't give you that ring of power where you can all of a sudden like make the house of cards collapse and just have your advertising engine. So that's a little bit of a history of like how we got from Twitter to Nostr and all these protocols. But it's just, I think, really important to realize that social media has become critical to how we work together. It's how we see each other. It's how we drive news. Like, you ask teenagers today who their celebrities are, who their heroes are, and it's no one from Hollywood. It's entirely authentically created people who built their own audiences on these social media platforms. And the successful ones, yeah, they figured out how to manipulate the algorithms. But we shouldn't be existing in a monoculture of algorithms. Like, algorithms are fine as long as I can choose which algorithms I'm going to use and choose how, like, and get to see their effects. And there are many, many different algorithms that lots of different people are choosing. And then you don't have the monoculture where you're, you know, victims of, you know, the Russian Internet Research Agency being able to come through with your spam, or a single wave of AI generated spam or manipulative content or brigading. Like, if we create a monoculture with a single set of rules that then define how everything's going to collapse together, then it's super vulnerable. But if we have this diverse ecosystem of many kinds of apps and many kinds of algorithms and users controlling what, deciding what they see, then all of it becomes more robust, because there's no way to just go in there and like, you know, oh, I found the one button that will reach everybody and, you know, the one trick with the SEO or the algorithms. So Nostr, you go in, you use it, you see a single app. Yeah, this is cool. It looks like Twitter. It looks like this, you know, looks like Medium. But the value is in the network, not just of the people using that one app, but then you can take those ideas, those content, your contacts, everything else, and you can put them in all these different apps. And so essentially what we're building is what in Asia might be called the super app, like WeChat, where, but WeChat is very controlled. We don't want that very controlled thing. We want to be able to innovate and collaborate. And so, like, that's what Nostr gives us, is because there are many different apps of every kind of app, and you have the choice of which ones you're going to use. And that's what's so exciting about it.
I love it, man. Thank you for sharing all that. That's a great breakdown and such a great story. So I really appreciate it. And I love how you brought up, it's funny how this is the part that's stuck in my brain, because this, I think you just connected a synapse for me here, how you talked about the Zynga era on Facebook, because I remember that very well. I was high school at the time, either middle school or high school, and I was obsessed with Fishville. That was my game. I wasn't a Farmville guy. I was a Fishville guy. And me and my buddy Luke had like this intense rivalry going, who's going to get the biggest tank? And I was just obsessed with this game, having so much fun with it. And that was, like you were saying, when there was like an app ecosystem. Like, no one's actually enjoying an app ecosystem on Facebook anymore. It's completely, you know, gone away from that. And so this is a very new opportunity to foster that once again. And I haven't even thought of any like games or gaming on Nostr. Is that already being built, or are there things out there that you've seen?
Yeah, there's a bit of gaming on Nostr, sort of the initial stuff. You play Go and chess and a few other games like that. But we don't yet have the, there's a level at which we need like nano apps. We have full Nostr apps, like Nostr.social, which is my app, or Domus or Primal. And then we have micro apps that are like just for like list management or just like lighter weight things. They don't do the whole ecosystem. And then we have nano apps, and nano apps exist within a single event type, an event kind. And so that might be the Farmville game where you have a little iframe with the event information, and then it pulls down the JavaScript to manipulate that iframe so that each purple is playing. And so those nano apps are what are going to open up the games so that the games don't have to exist in a standalone thing, but you could be like, okay, yes, I'm going to invite anyone to play, you know, Fishville or Farmville or whatever other game I'm going to play. And then people can interact with it and reply with it. And it loads the JavaScript and it manipulates a little bit of set of events. It writes some new events and then it goes back to everyone else. Like it's an inverting of the model of how we build software and where the power is. That's so interesting. There's a Nostr app called NPub Pro. And at first you're like, oh, this is really cool. I can take all my Nostr content and I make a web page and I choose what ghost template to display and everything else. Awesome. But the thing is, NPub Pro doesn't exist on a server. The entirety of the data that describes what template, what content, what your web page is, what the URL, everything else, that is written onto the decentralized network as events onto these relays. And so it is a web publishing platform that then itself lives on top of Nostr, that then you can view directly from any web page. And that is like flipping around how software development works and deployments and who has the right to do what. Like open source was about developers having a right to build stuff. You can see the source, you can modify it, you can re-release it. But data became more important than code. And so then what we're looking at today is not do I have the right to the code? It's do I have the right to the social connections and the data? Because that is more important and more valuable than just the code itself. It's like Twitter released its algorithm. And the Twitter source code has been leaked. And a bunch of the Facebook source code has been leaked. But just having a copy of the Facebook or Twitter source code or their algorithms doesn't help you. Because you need the people. It's the social aspect. You need the collaborative stuff. And so what I'm excited about Nostr is that aspect of how do we cultivate people being able to build and collaborate with apps where they're bringing their data with them.
And that social graph is a term that we use a lot in Nostr, how we are able to have all of our followers with us as we go around these apps. And this is one of the things that you brought up in your presentation, Nostriga, how Nostr is a social app protocol. And that sort of ties in with what I was talking about earlier, how my old memories of playing these games on Facebook, similar, but you know, as you sort of brought up earlier, it felt like an open ecosystem, but it never really was. They did a sort of a good job, just like the early Twitter, of really fostering the facade of an open ecosystem. It was open at some point, but there was always that single point of failure kind of lurking in the background that could snatch it all up and start changing the whole model. But basically what you're saying is Nostr is different. Maybe you could explain like why exactly Nostr is different. Is it simply just that there is no like single point of failure that has that like, you know, final control switch where they can just take it away when they want to? Because I know that obviously there's no CEO, no developer, like core team or, you know, rule makers. Is that it? Is there more you'd add to that?
But there's no rule makers, but the reason that Nostr is different is because in a traditional web app and mobile app, you have these clients that are very thin and they read data out of some centralized database and they seem different. You know, this is the user, this is who they're going to follow, everything else. And then it gets given to you and you can do stuff and then you send it back to this central server and the central server has all the power to decide who's messaging whom, who posted what, who's going to see it. And the central server can change who said what, like, because it's entirely within the server's control. Now, the way in which Nostr and other protocols work, it flips that around. And so because you're using public key cryptography and you're signing all of the messages, it's sort of similar to the way a transaction would be signed in a cryptocurrency, but without the proof of work or the consensus that a blockchain would have. But each user has a key pair and they sign the data and then they give it off to the servers. And so the servers in the Nostr world, they can't lie about the data. And so you can trust these sort of trustless relay servers to honestly reproduce your content and reshare it out and make it available. And you don't have to trust the company. And that's why in Nostr, we use all these different relay servers all the time. And you don't really have to know who's running the relay or what the rules are or everything else or where it is in the world, because you know that the relays have these constraints. They can't fake what anyone says. And so we've made essentially this social database, and we've used signatures and content and sets of norms and rules that lets everybody write to that database together without having to trust that the database isn't lying, because we've got this signature verification. And so now, instead of having to rely on a corporation that we're going to trust to be honest brokers of our privacy and our data, we have this way in which the software and the protocol can give that honest check on what's going on. And that fundamentally inverts the power dynamic and inverts the power, who has the power to say what and who has the power to participate. And so we're not creating the situation with these new protocols that would let a Dick Costello or a Facebook sort of pull things together and collaborate. We're not vulnerable to that, because in the Nostr ecosystem, there's no off switch. Like you can't stop the network. You can choose sort of what part of the network you're collaborating with and how that's going to work, but you can't stop it. And so because it has this like unstoppable nature, a lot of people are seeing it as a censorship resistant protocol or a free speech protocol. And it is the free speech protocol, and that's a powerful aspect of it, but it's not free speech just in the sense of like I can say terrible things. It's more free speech as in like we can come together and set the norms and rules for our own spaces. And so that is free speech for developers, it's free speech for users, it's free speech for communities being able to set their own norms and their own sets of rules. And some of those rules could be like, this is Nostr for Christian communities, and we are only going to post family-friendly Christian values. And another one could be like, this is the part of Nostr where we post lots of porn and lots of adult content. And like, neither one of those communities is wrong. There's nothing wrong with the family Christian values people saying this is what we want in our space. There is nothing wrong with the OnlyFans sex worker folks who say these are the pornography that I want to post. What is wrong is being able to say I don't get to decide which gets what, or somehow one person in San Francisco is going to decide all acceptable speech in 6,000 languages for the entire world, millions of different subcultures. The communities of users should decide that for themselves. And Nostr gives us that ability. And so, yes, it gives us the ability to have people who've been deplatformed for hate speech, but that's incidental. Like, that's not the real reason we're here. The real reason we're here is because we want a protocol and an internet, a social layer to how we build applications that lets the anarchists be there and then lets the Christian dads be there and lets the sex workers be there and lets the like Palestinian activists be there and lets all of these different sets of communities operate with their own norms, and where we're not asking permission for some unaccountable internet governance that controls the platform that lets us participate in it. Because like the insanity of the trust and safety rules at these big companies is they never publish the trust and safety rules. You don't even know what the rules are governing the space. And the reason they don't is because if they publish the rules, then there'd be a set of motivated people who'd know how to get just up to the edge of them. And they're trying to deal with it on a massive scale of hundreds of millions of people, billions of people. But humans aren't good at handling the concept of billions of people. Like, we don't get it. But if we create space by which we can shrink down the social space that we have to govern so that it is an acceptable number of people that we can get to know and can coordinate, then these intractable problems of scale and social media governance become tractable because you can have a conversation with these folks and you can set norms. And so that's what gets me super excited about the free speech aspects of Nostr, is not that we have to suffer every kind of speech for everyone. It's that we can have contextual rules. And when Jack Dorsey first started proposing funding Blue Sky and then switched to supporting Nostr, it was because he didn't want to be the decider anymore. He had realized that even the person being the most powerful, influential person over the public sphere, that was an impossible problem. And no one should be in that position of power. And so we're building Nostr so that we don't exist in that power structure. Like, so that there isn't a dependent on these views. And that lets us govern society in a better way. It lets us govern these digital spaces in a better way because we don't want one set of rules.
Mm-hmm. That's such a good example. And that whole fiasco you mentioned earlier about 2016 and, you know, how Jack Dorsey just caught so much fire over, you know, how things were handled when there really wasn't a way to do it correctly. It's not possible. It was just a clear example of the failures of central planning for communication. And as all the Bitcoiners on there know, there are just certain realms where there should not be any central planning. Money is one. Communication is one. These are two just critical aspects of humanity and just who we are as a species, that like putting it in the hands of a singular entity is always going to cause problems if you give it enough time. So it was just inevitable, like you said, and you guys knew it was going to happen. The rest of us, like myself, were just like using these fun apps, saw that, where the problems come in. But you already knew it was coming. And it's super exciting.
In 2017, I sat down with Jack, and we had some kombucha. We usually catch up over kombucha. And he said, "Raoul, should I delete Trump's account? And what do we do about these alt-right folks like Richard Spencer and other folks like that?" And I was like, well, you know, some of these folks are doing things that, yeah, you should probably delete their accounts because they're like trying to get people physically hurt and things like that. But he couldn't delete Trump's account because Twitter was a publicly traded company. Like, Twitter had to maximize shareholder value for a particular set of shareholders. And those shareholders had more power and influence over Twitter than its users or than any of the employees or any of the executives. And that is fine for some kinds of businesses. But for our digital spaces, for our public spheres, like, we end up with these insane things where the shareholders of Twitter got so much value over Twitter being sold to Elon Musk that it was a no-brainer. Like, 98% of people who are shareholders voted for it. But the users of Twitter and the employees of Twitter and the societies in which Twitter is being used did not benefit by that handover. Now, maybe if someone else with a different sensibility could have taken it private, it would have been really good. But it was handled really poorly. And so that's the problem, is that once the offer was on the table, the only thing that Jack and Parag and the rest of the board could do would be to fight for the deal to go through, because that maximizes shareholder value. And that we're worse off for it. Like, sometimes maximizing shareholder value makes a ton of sense. But in this case, the larger value to society and the world was reduced by maximizing this one stakeholder. Now, the irony for me, who have been working for years and years on social media protocols, was until Elon Musk took over Twitter, everybody thought we were crazy. Everybody thought, no way is anyone going to ever use these protocols. They might work technically, but why are they going to get adoption? Why would anyone use this? Do you need just scale? What's the business model? All that stuff. And then Elon took over and everybody went from, you're crazy, this will never work, to, why isn't it ready already? Why isn't it, like, where's the solution? Where did you guys build this stuff? And it was so frustrating. I mean, it was great because all of a sudden we didn't feel like Cassandra saying, don't trust the big tech, you know, the big centralized social media platforms, you know, don't trust Telegram, don't trust WhatsApp, don't trust Twitter, don't trust Snapchat, don't trust Instagram. They will betray you. And until Elon took over, no one believed us. And then the moment Elon took over, everybody's like, why isn't it ready?
You're vindicated very abruptly with a lot of force. And as people tend to do, they don't understand that these things take time.
These things take time. Like, I've been working, you know, on this my entire career and working on building new generations of social media protocols full time since 2018. And building these things and building prototypes and trying to figure out how to make the tech work and the social aspect work and the users and fund this, because I didn't make much money off of Twitter at all, unfortunately. And these things take time, and these things take, they're hard to cultivate. They're hard to bring together. But the neat part about Elon taking over Twitter is it did show everyone, oh, you can't just trust that whoever is CEO today of these companies is always going to be CEO, and they're going to be good stewards of this. Ironically enough, Jack Dorsey, Mark Zuckerberg, Adam Mosseri, who runs Instagram, Kevin Systrom, who founded Instagram, Evan Spiegel, like Matt Mullenweg, who now owns and runs WordPress and Tumblr, all of these guys actually were doing a really good job of cultivating a safe space and trying to be inclusive as everyone and building something up. Like, the irony is that they were doing a good job as benevolent dictators of these spaces. And it took someone thinking they knew what they were doing and being this kind of bull in a china shop for everybody to go, oh my God, maybe we shouldn't trust them. And like, we shouldn't trust anyone. Like, we need, like, these things shouldn't, we don't need a new king to control what space there is. We don't need a new Rupert Murdoch to dominate the news cycles. What we need is a new set of rules that work like the internet, that work like this tech, so that we can have everybody participate. And asking everybody to participate is gonna be messy. Just like you walk down the street in any big city around the world and there's someone drunk saying something inappropriate, And that thing, you know, it's going to happen because you have the idea that, oh, I'm like in the bar district where everyone like hangs out and gets drunk, or I'm, you know, or you walk into a library, you know, the library rules. So you walk into someone's house, you know, the rules of visiting someone's house. And it depends on what country you're in. You go into someone's house in Canada, you damn well better take your shoes off. You go in someone's house in other parts of the world, you better have brought a gift. Like the norms of what you're supposed to do is different. You go into someone's house in Argentina and you have to go around the room and kiss everyone. And if you don't, you're being very rude. So, but we learn that in our physical spaces. We learn that in social spaces. What we have in digital spaces is the equivalent because we are the same people. We are the same humans that evolved a couple hundred thousand years ago. And so when we think about digital spaces, it's not, like, don't think about it as something radically new. Think of it as new architecture and new kinds of spaces where we're collaborating. And I've talked about this in my talks, which is like, you know, Twitter is like the hipster dive bar. It's loud. It's everybody there. It's totally cool. There's lots of stuff going on. You feel like you're in the center of it and people are screaming and yelling and someone probably knocked someone else over and dumped a beer on the ground. And, you know, it's messy, but it's exciting. You know, Instagram is kind of like the cross between like a, you know, fashion runway and an art gallery. And like, it's curated and people work hard on their presentation and there's, you know, these stars that do this thing. And, but it's not very viral. Like the communication is a bit rough. You know, Tumblr is like, you know, a Comic Con or something. It's like this subculture of stuff. And each of these spaces, we can see the digital equivalents of them. But we shouldn't be just saying, okay, all of Instagram is this way. We'd be like, there's lots of ways of sharing photos and sharing videos. And so what we need to do with Nostr and all these other protocols is build, realizing that we're doing the digital equivalent of physical spaces. So you know, is this a bar or a cafe or a library? Is this a university campus lecture hall? Or is this a kindergarten? They're both educational institutions, but they got very different norms about what you're supposed to do. And once you realize that our digital spaces that we're building in these social media apps are like physical spaces, then you become less upset about someone getting drunk at the bar. You know, it's like, it's okay because you're at the bar. And like, as long as you handle your alcoholism and, you know, don't drive afterwards, it's fine. So that screaming, yelling thing is fine sometimes in some places. In other places, you need to be really polite and quiet and speak with your library voice. And in other places, it's fine to show off how beautiful you are. All of those are fine if we know the context. And we need to build the apps that show us the context and the norms and acculturate us as we join them so that I know how to behave in this space. And we need many different spaces. The software needs to support this diversity of spaces. And we have examples of it working. Subreddits have their own mods, and those mods can set rules and norms about what goes on in them. Even 4chan, which is sort of famous on the internet for being this free-for-all, there are mods and there are rules. And you can go to different, you know, forums on 4chan, and if you post things that aren't following the rules, you delete your content. That's contextual. It's great. So we need to be able to let that contextual stuff happen and have people learn the norms. And then when they violate the norms, have a good way of interacting with it. Because if you think about it, our way of social regulating behavior right now is a bit dysfunctional. So we have this massive thing about cancel culture. And so you go in and you're like, I'm going to like call you out and ask everyone to unfollow you and ask everyone to block you because you did this bad thing. That is a form of social regulation that comes from weakness. because we have no say over the rules of the platform, we have no ability to do actual governance, we're going to regulate social behavior with a particularly vindictive groupthink kind of shame. And it works when you have very little power. But if a community of people would be like, you know, hey, stop being an asshole, and the community could be like, okay, we're going to just pause seeing your stuff for 48 hours, or we're going to just decide that when you post it here, there's a content warning that these people have decided there's things, or we're going to decide that your replies don't show up directly in the feed until the original poster says they can be visible. If we give people governance tools where they can really decide what those rules are, then we don't have to have a cancel culture, which is all about social shame about what people are doing, because we can actually address their behavior. And so we have this like super dysfunctional, like freak out thing that turns people in on each other because we lack governance rules, because we've been given this shopping mall from Facebook where they make billions of dollars, but the users, we don't have any tools to resolve the conflicts. And Noster doesn't give us all the tools. Like, we've got a lot to do. We've got a lot of work to do. But it gives us the building blocks to build those tools, because you could choose which relays host your data. And the relays are free to think, make different choices. You could run a relay that said, if I've muted you, don't show your replies to any of my threads. And that's absolutely fine. And it's not censorship if someone else can run a relay with a different set of rules. If you don't like my set of rules, then you can communicate in a place where you set up your own set of rules, which are different. And so a censorship-free environment isn't, I can't control, you can't control what I say. It is that we exist in the space by which different communities and people can define the rules of their own communication. And you also can always exist on this network and define different sets of rules and different sets of values. And so I don't want to build a system by which people can be completely kicked off of it, but I do want to build a system where I can say, oh, you're really drunk, I'm going to kick you out of my living room.
And I think that, you know, the way you talked about it earlier, just the way that the relays work, this is how I explain it to people. Because there are people, this is a common question of, when they hear it's completely open, they're scared. Like, oh my gosh, am I just going to see like horrible graphic content everywhere? It's not going to be a good experience. But it's made up of these centralized relays. It's like micro-centralization, where there's a bunch of centralized, you know, data servers. But all together, it makes a decentralized web where you just get to choose which ones you want, which are, you know, they are doing the work of filtering out that sort of content the way that they want to, and you get to choose which way that you want to view the feed. So it just puts control back into people's hands.
Yeah, so the relays don't have to host any content. For example, Fiat Joff, who was the original creator of Noster, runs this one relay that only shows you back content from your own country. So when I posted New Zealand to this relay, it knows that I'm in New Zealand because it geolocates my IP address, and it will then only show my content to other people in New Zealand, and other people in New Zealand can see my content. And so that's a perfectly acceptable rule that, like, we only want to see people in our own country. We want to be able to find it. And that's great. You could have another one, which is strong web of trust, which is like, I only show people out who are 2 degrees out. And if you're not socially connected to the person, we don't show that content. We could do another, you know, there's another relay that won't host any content that mentions Bitcoin or related terms, or if you have some Bitcoin related term in your profile. So if you say, you know, Maxi or BTC or Bitcoin, everything else in your profile.
Laser eyes on the profile picture, it finds the laser eyes block.
It blocks you. And so you can go to this relay and you can view all the Noster content you want, and you'll never see Bitcoin content. And that's free speech. Like, that's because someone could also set up and run a relay that's only Bitcoin content. And if, like, you don't have the Bitcoin hashtags in your profile, you're not going to be hosted. And that's also free speech. Like, that's part of what makes it so exciting and powerful is we can have a multitude of ideas and values and ways of collaborating and sets of norms. And we don't all have to fit whatever Meta says is the right behavior. You know, speaking of Meta, after Twitter got taken over by Elon Musk, Meta's had this idea that they're going to launch this thing called Threads. And it's basically Instagram, except with text. And in order to get around regulators, which would have been upset at Meta trying to take over Twitter, they said that they're going to be open and they're connected to the Fediverse. And they are. And they are opening up and they are connecting to some of these open protocols, which is great. Like, that's good. And but we really have to think, like, weird government regulators who would have tried to break up Meta if they'd done this without opening up. But you look at what gets discussed on Threads, and the best way to go viral on Threads is to say something demonstrably untrue in a really painfully naive way. And, like, everybody will pile on to, like, fix your answer and, like, push it forward. And it's, like, that's not, like, sure, Threads wants that algorithm. Great. But, like, we should be able to choose other algorithms. And, like, that doesn't make good community. Like, that doesn't encourage helpful, like, that's just sort of piling on. And I don't want Meta making more decisions for me. Like, I don't, like, they famously fuck up all the time and they're constantly apologizing for it and there's constantly leaking stuff and they're constantly doing unethical behavior. And, like, those aren't people we should give the keys to the public sphere and the public discourse and our private discourse. Because, like, these platforms shouldn't just be for public space, but we should be able to have encrypted communication. We should be able to use Tor to connect to this stuff and have end-to-end encrypted groups. You know, Telegram is an incredible platform. You have these giant groups, everything else, but it's not end-to-end encrypted. The only way it's encrypted is if you're in a private chat and both people turn on the privacy settings in the chat. Everything else is unencrypted. And so we're dependent on them, you know. They're like, we won't give any data to the government. Well, like, one arrest and all of a sudden they're handing over any data to the government because they have the data, because they're designed in a centralized way. Discord runs AI bots that look at every private message and every private Discord server and are constantly intervening and, like, banning Discord servers and changing it based on what people are saying. And at first you're like, well, what do I have to hide? Like, what's the problem with losing this privacy? But a good example of this is Google, in their infinite wisdom of attempting to protect us against child pornography and CSAM, child affected sexual material, built into one of the versions of Android a detector that used AI to figure out whether or not you were taking pictures of naked babies and children. And automatically reported if anything was on the camera that was taken of a naked baby, immediately sent it off to the police and suspended your account. And now there are all these cases of parents who are sending private messages to their physicians, their pediatricians, and the pediatrician says, hey, take a picture of that diaper rash so we can know what to prescribe. And so the parent goes in, the dad goes in, takes the photo, just sends it to their pediatrician, but Google doesn't know, it doesn't know the context, it sees that there's a naked picture and suspends all accounts for this person. Their Gmail account for a decade is gone, their YouTube account, their phone number because they're using Google Fi for it, everything else. And sends it off, and the police go and look at the photo and look at the context and are like, oh, this is stupid. why is Google sending us this? We don't care. This is clearly not a pedophile. This is a parent talking to their pediatrician. But Google doesn't care because Google doesn't have that kind of liability. So in that case, like there's a, like it was in Wired and everything else. Like in that case, the guy never got his data back. He never got his phone number back. He never got his Gmail account back. He never got his YouTube account back. It all disappeared because some algorithm decided that the liability of this was better off. And so we need end-to-end encryption. We need privacy because we can't trust arbitrary, unaccountable systems. And we don't want to hand over that control to these institutions that don't have any financial interest or didn't have any social interest in doing the right thing. Like, Google is like, are you potentially, you know, is it potentially illegal material? Block it. Delete your account. I don't care. Just, and now imagine that for all political speech. Imagine that for places where you're not just in a country with the First Amendment or other strong free speech rights that are constitutional. Imagine in a place where police are corruptible. Imagine in your space where you can't trust your government, where you don't necessarily have those civil rights. Now, in those places, especially the murky middle, because there's some places like North Korea, it's authoritarian nightmare. But most people live in this murky middle. Like 2/3 of the people in the world don't live in democracies. But we still have some set of free speech. And if we hand over all the power into the case of governments like Brazil and India and everything else, they're like constantly meddling with what speech is appropriate, what things are appropriate, what isn't, and everything else. That's a really dangerous situation because institutions won't respect that power. And you can't trust them. And that we shouldn't be able to hand over our entire internal lives and how everything works. And so what we need to do is say, look, you know, if you live in a place with a nation state and a government and a set of rules of law, obviously the sovereign state is going to want you to comply with those laws. But we also have the rights to privacy. We have the rights to our own domicile. We have our rights to things, and we need to keep those private. And these digital tools have the ability to be this 1984 style George Orwell surveillance state, much more than even in 1984. And so we need to build digital platforms that provide resilience and provide autonomy by default for everyone, not because any one person did something wrong, but because we need a system of accountability. And if we give the power to surveil everything, then people will take it and they'll use it. And we'll be screwed.
Yeah. And I love how we're sort of dancing around all these different human aspects, like how humans, and this is one of the things you talked about in your talk too. I don't know if I mentioned it earlier, but I'm going to be sure to put your presentation in the show notes, because it talks about a lot of this stuff very deeply and in detail with visuals and everything. But one of the things you said there was how we build the technology we shape the technology and then technology shapes us. So Absolutely. It's sort of a loop, and it's really important that we do things right and build things the right way so that loop doesn't turn into like a death loop of problems, but rather an abundance loop of thriving and prosperity, where it can actually increase our ability to thrive with the people around us, because it has the ability to do that. We've all seen these bits and pieces of social media really helping us, and we see the bright light shining through where it can really improve our lives in a positive way. And the more time I spend on Nostr, the more people I see that are just saying that that's all they get on Nostr. It's just so much positivity. And so it's very interesting to watch this unfold in an actual free place. Another human side that you've talked about here is there, we're seeing how humans are really complex and there's layers to us, how we work. You said as the world changes, humans stay the same. And I think this is definitely true. This is something I come back to a lot covering different random topics on the podcast, how I think that just when you look at humans throughout history, like we really keep doing the same things over and over. It's just like there's so many repeating patterns and we never learn from it, which is just kind of funny to look back on as you learn. But then at the same time, that's not to say that humans are all the same. Like there's a lot of different kinds of humans, but like, you know, we were talking about how there's just different types of people that will find cool things on Nostr. Like there's the social app enthusiasts that we were talking about, the Farmville and Fishville players. There's the free speech maximalists who are, you know, just been banned everywhere. And there's so many other ones depending on, like, you know, there's so many different platforms out there. There's Instagram and Twitter, yeah, and Pinterest. Absolutely. And so there's different types of people that use these different types of things. And this is a new, completely open playing field where people will be able to get to do all of those types of things again, just on an open protocol. And it just won't be in a silo. And we haven't even talked about really the creator side yet, which is something I know that you're very versed in because you work with them at Nos.social. I think that would be another fun one to really dive into. Like people who are really thinking about creating content, why should they care about Nostr and what will they get from the platform or the protocol?
So people who create content are essentially, many of them are running a kind of small business. They're running a space by which you are able to write or talk or make videos or make photos and or make paintings. You're creating on this space and you're building out an audience, and you can build out that audience directly with people and you can collaborate with them. But the amazing part about that is the existing platforms, they help you go viral. You don't need an agent. You don't need a label to release your own music. But the problem with doing it on centralized platforms is you don't own your own name. You don't own your own audience. Like one moment to the next, they could be like, now you're demonetized. Or now I'm not going to show your content virally to anyone else. You know, that's what happened to some of our creators. You know, we have creators on Nostr that we brought on through our creator residency program who were told by Instagram that if they, you know, this is a Mama Ganoush, she's a drag queen. And as long as she was doing drag, and she's an, you know, Arab American, Palestinian American drag queen, as long as she was doing drag, it was fine. Even drag that played on Arab tropes and like really pissed off, you know, conservative Muslims, Instagram was fine. And the moment she was like, and don't commit genocide in Gaza, then Instagram was like, your account will be suspended. And she's like, why are you suspending my account? I was like, oh, okay, we'll not suspend your account, but we won't let anyone who doesn't follow you ever see your content. And that, like, that's crazy. That's dangerous. Like, you wouldn't invest in opening a restaurant and when the owner of the property gets to decide each morning whether or not you have the keys to the restaurant. That's what it's like on these platforms right now. People need to be able to run businesses that get paid for content and pull things together, and they need to be able to do it in such a way that they can trust that they own their relationship to their followers, they own their name, they own their content in the network ongoing, because that lets us invest in it. And so one of the tricks that we have in building Nostr is we need to build Nostr in such a way that we are able to help them build up their audience. Because you only get worried about being deplatformed or demonetized or shadow banned or the rules changing. You only worry about that after you've built up an audience. And so what we need to do for these new creators is not just make a version of OnlyFans or, you know, my paid Bible verse of the day, whatever it is, we need to help those people in the process of building an audience. And the centralized platforms are really, really good at using AI to determine what things are likely to go viral and what things are likely to build a big audience and then drive traffic to them. And so maybe the solution is we build it with AI. Maybe we do a bunch of machine learning stuff, or maybe we build the opposite. Maybe we build a system by which users are able to curate content and curate lists, and you can follow different lists. Like, we don't have to invent it the same way that they invented it, but we do have to make it easy for creators to build an audience on Noster and easily charge for it. Because right now, like, there's like 10 different ways to log in with Noster, and there's like 8 different ways to set up Lightning payments and Zaps. And, you know, I saw someone this morning who was like posting, asking Will from Domus, like, hey, how do I get a wallet? And Will's like, where do you live in the world? Because if you're in New York State, it's different than if you live in New Jersey, which is different than living in Canada, which is different than if you live in New Zealand or Nigeria. It's like, and they're like, use this wallet and then use this one and then this connection here and do everything else. And like, all of a sudden, you're a fucking mad scientist as opposed to just someone who wants to charge for your content. And so we're still at the like hacking it together phase. We need it to be 1,000 times more easy for people who are focused on their content creating. And they want it. They don't like it. They hate being sharecroppers on Instagram. Ask anyone. Ask all small businesses that use it, promote it, ask creators. Like, people don't like it. That's why people are happy to go to Substack, where you control the payment relationships, even if Substack provides the platform. But with all these other social things, we don't know how to interact with it. You know, we think of Twitter as the public sphere where news or culture or cryptocurrency, all these things are being dated. But did you know that before Elon Musk took over Twitter, 40% of all outbound links, all outbound traffic from Twitter went to one website only? OnlyFans.com.
Wow.
Twitter was the largest porn site on the internet. And you never saw porn on Twitter without looking for it. They were so good at letting the porn people flourish and build out their audiences that everybody who was selling their content on OnlyFans was doing all of their lead generation on Twitter. Everybody who was organizing a Clubhouse audio chat was doing all of their lead generation on Twitter. Everybody who was making a Substack newsletter was doing all of their lead generation on Twitter. So Twitter was doing a really good job with a fairly light algorithm of lead generation for all of these different things, but never capitalizing on any of it as its own business. And so we don't need the OnlyFans to be off on a different network from the Twitter where you discover it. They can exist in the same network of folks, and you should be able to have all of these things interacting and collaborating. And so that's part of what's super exciting, is this getting back the permissionless exploration of Web 2.0, but now with a business model that isn't just advertising. So when I talk about Noster, I always tell people it's not a blockchain project. You don't need Bitcoin and everything else to do it, but you can use Lightning payments and micropayments to make the economics of it work. And if you just talk about it in terms of economics, in terms of payments, so that the system runs without ads, everybody likes it. People like that. They want it. They want to be able to do the payments. They want it easy. They don't want the painful credit card processing stuff, which are constantly censoring speech as well. And so that part of it is important and is valuable, but it's the utility of the payments, not whatever payment system you're using. And so that's what I've been trying to get more folks who are interested in Noster to realize, is like, Zaps, Lightning payments, Bitcoin, they are a feature of Noster. They are a useful, important feature of Noster. But they're not the reason people join. They're not the reason people use it. The reason people join, the reason people use it is because there is stuff people want. There's excitement there. There's energy. There's community. You go for the community of people you're doing, and then you figure out the software and the affordances, how it works. And you're lucky if it's then not selling eyeballs and driving you to click on ads. So what we need to do is we need to make it easy for creators to build that audience, to be able to charge for people, to be able to have people pay easily. You know, the Primal integration where you can just buy some Satoshis from Apple Pay and give Apple its pound of flesh, that is great. The problem is that you need to do this whole process of setting up this custodial wallet with Stripe, and they're wonderful, but like, it's a lot of work. It's a lot of money. The compliance cost is high. You know, I think we should also just set it up so you could have, you know, a Stripe wallet that supports Lightning and a bunch of other things like that. We need to make it easy. We need to make it so people are paying for things. We need to support subscription payments and recurring payments, which don't work well in cryptocurrencies or Bitcoin, but are essential for the creator economy.
So many great points there. One of the things that you mentioned just about how the external links work on certain platforms, and I think this is such a good example that so many creators have found through platforms like Twitter and Instagram, where anytime you put any external link, it just gets massively deboosted and suppressed, so hardly anyone sees it. Because
they don't want to send you off their platforms.
Yeah, right. So they design the algorithm to punish you for doing that. And I can notice that it on Nostr, there isn't any of that. So I can send people to my website, my blog, or you know, I can just put up a goofy SoundCloud song I was listening to or a YouTube video I thought was funny. And you don't have to worry about like, oh, this is not only is this going to not show up on anyone's feed, but my future posts are going to be punished because I'm getting less engagement. So it like really it sends you down like a downhill slope if you walk out of line from just, you know, feeding the algorithm beast of just trending topics and like clickbait, you know. And so and it's crazy how much that changes the way that you act when you're like actually engaging with this content.
Yeah, and the centralized platforms, they do this thing where they try and keep you there all of the time. Like because the more time you spend on the platforms, the more ads you'll click on, the more ads you'll view, they want you to spend as much time as possible on it. And we don't need people to spend as much time. One of the prototypes I'm working with right now is a Nostr app that is a personalized newsletter that is in narrative form. And so what it does is each day it goes and it looks at all the conversations in your network, who said what the replies were, what the discussions, everything else. And it makes a customized newsletter that you can get to the end of, which is just like, here are the discussions for the last day of everybody you've been following. And you can click through and participate in the discussion, and everything else. But you can also just read it like you're reading a newsletter or a newspaper and just like, okay. I start at the beginning and I read to the end and I click through the ones I'm done and then I'm done and I don't need to come back and look at my newsletter or my content till tomorrow. And I know when I join tomorrow, it'll be like, this is the last time you looked at the newsletter. I'm going to generate all new content since then and I won't miss anything, but I don't have to then hit reload and reload and reload. Like we don't need to make systems that maximize the time you spend so that you view more ads.
Yeah, just eyeball addiction, basically. Just like the constant hunt for dopamine. And I'm not going to say Nostr isn't kind of addicting, because it is, but for different reasons. it's to me, I do spend a lot of time on Nostr because, well, there's so many things. Like we've talked about some of them here, how it's not designed in a way to where there's like an algorithm like keeping you addicted. It's more that I'm addicted to the real human connection and the ability to be myself. And oh, not to mention you actually get paid in Bitcoin for good content, you know? And so of course, people who are looking to monetize, which should be, you know, anyone. And this is something I love about the design of this is there's so many, I can't remember which of the other, you know, quote unquote decentralized protocols you talked about before on your presentation that sort of looks down on people that are trying to make money through their content. I know that Reddit is very much like this as well. There's a lot of them. where it just says like, oh, if you're just here for money, if you want to get payment for your content. But Nostr just has it native to where you, there's just a little lightning button where you just send zaps and you just earn just like that. And I think that's way better, because when there's actually an incentive there to create good content, you actually get paid for it. You just see better content, and you're able to visualize the dream where you can, you know, potentially someday make this full time, or at least, you know, buy some meals or pay some rent by providing value to people in an open setting where you can make people's day better with a good meme or a good blog post or a podcast that teaches them something. And it just opens so many avenues for these creative minds, and anyone out there who has something to give to the world, which I believe is every human being, has something to share, and just gives them the ability to enter this free market of ideas and test it out and see if they're really giving value to people. And you can see that quickly. And one of the examples that just came in like a day ago as of this recording, I'm not sure if you know Dr. Ken Berry, if that rings a bell, but he just joined on Nostr like a few days ago, and I was so excited about this because this has been one of the legends in the health and diet world. He has like 3 million subscribers on YouTube, really big name. And I've been nudging him for like months to get on. He finally joined. And so I'm watching him go through the steps of the Nostr rabbit hole in real time. He's posting like, wow, this is way more fun than Twitter. And he's made like 100,000 sats just in the 24 hours. And, you know, he's starting to realize, wow, this is, so my followers are actually protected here. These big accounts with big names have been walking on such a small tightrope for so long because they have so much to lose if they step on the wrong toe. Or, you know, he talks about the carnivore diet a lot. If the right set of vegans comes in and like shuts him down with a bunch of like reporting, then his whole life's work is gone. And so Nostr protects you from that.
As opposed to like, you know, in the Nostr world, we can set up a mute list where the vegans can set up their mute list and they can run their relays, which is like no meat talk, no meat. And it's fine. And then, you know, the keto carnivore folks can put theirs where they mute all the vegans and they only take posts what they're talking about. And that's fine. Like, these two should be able to exist in the same place. And instead of us having this thing where we're gaming the referees trying to like push the rules to win in this single like winner take all ecosystem. And so, you know, one of the things that I'm excited about it coming out of Nostriga is this idea of a Nostr growth team of what do we do as a community so that that health influencer, that doctor helps, like sticks around and gets himself set up and builds an audience. And when he joins, people keep following, and he's able to easily move his followers from those other platforms to Nostr. And so like, how do we help these people? Ainsley is a musician. She's like a singer-songwriter. She's on Nostr. I mean, she wants her audience on Nostr. Like, she wants her fans there. But they're all like teenage girls, like, who are interested in like folk rock, like, and like country. Like, they're not going to be interested in hearing about the Bitcoin memes. And they're not going to be interested in, and probably the Christian Family Value folks either. Like, they're there about their community music. And so how do we make a way in which, you know, the health influencer or the musician or all these other people can bring their people in and have them connect and work together and use all of these apps and connect to the larger network, but like make it their own. And that, I'm super excited on us spending the next year as the apps mature, figuring that out. Like, how do we grow to 10 million different communities instead of just the few that we have right now?
I think that's a great transition to what we can make our final question here so we can start taking this one home. How about this? What do you think is going to happen in the next year? And what are you seeing happen in the next 10 years if we make these steps correctly? What do you think is the next step for us and then get super cosmic long-term? If we make the right steps, how will this Nostr community flourish? And how is our conversation going to be different when we run this back 10 years from now talking about Nostr reminiscing and how everything changed?
That's a great question. So what do I see in the next year? I want to see us get the apps easier to use. I want to see us to cultivate more community stuff. I love the stuff that Alex is doing with Ditto, all these, the creator residencies, all these different apps, the music apps. How do we make it so that people join and they're joining their communities and they're not joining Nostr? Like, Nostr is the protocol. Like, you don't join
activity. You don't join email, right?
You don't join RSS. Like, you follow a bunch of blogs of people you're reading. So we need to get to the point where you're not joining Nostr. You're joining a set of people, and Nostr is the protocol that you're using. It's not the place. So that's my hope for the next year, and that we have many different communities and spaces, and so we stop becoming sort of one tightly connected cluster. Now, in 10 years, maybe we're not using Nostr at all. Maybe we come up with a new protocol. But the world is built on these permissionless apps where they interact. And we have cemented the power in users and communities being able to control their apps on open protocols. And so the concept of Facebook's control or Meta's control, I want it to feel as anachronistic as thinking about AOL and CompuServe. Like, AOL and CompuServe and Prodigy were these social platforms. You used a dial-up modem, you called in, you connected, and they control all of the content. If you wanted to make a page on AOL, you had to go to Virginia and like pay them and buy the rights to the page, and they had all this control. And then we got the open web, and the idea of like that AOL thing is like, well, that's a totalitarian nightmare because now I can make my own web page. So in 10 years, I want Meta and similar apps to feel like AOL. Like, AOL is still there. I went to help my older sister, and she still has an AOL email address. And I'm just like, Jesus Christ. So like, Meta is still going to be around, like all these other platforms. But I want us to think of the centralized social media platforms the same way we think of AOL in 10 years. That's my dream. And that the social media thing feels like the web. It feels like this openness, this playness of everything else. And so, you know, we don't talk about the web as exciting today because it's the air we breathe. So that's what I want Nostr and the other social protocols to be. And maybe the protocol is called Nostr. Maybe the protocol is called other things. It does not matter as long as we figure out how to make it good and compelling, and it's where people are using it in communities. That's my vision, is let's make Meta the new AOL.
And that's very similar of an idea, the way you're talking about how we aren't joining Nostr anymore in the future, or, you know, it's just the underlying layer that's just sort of a given. And the Bitcoiners have a similar view for the future where, you know, we won't be Bitcoiners anymore. We're just people that use money, and Bitcoin is just the money, you know? Like, there, what another example would be, you know, like plumbing, that it works in people's houses. People aren't passionate about plumbing. It's just there. It's just part of the architecture that works, and it allows us to do these things. And Similar to how money just allows us to transact with people with real things. And it's kind of crazy that we're passionate about really the money itself. What's that?
When plumbing was introduced, it was really, really cool.
Yeah.
Like, indoor plumbing and sewer systems were an innovative new thing when they were being introduced. And people spent a lot of time talking about plumbing. And they spent a lot of time talking about how exciting their indoor toilets were, the flush toilets and like water and like where that went. And for a while, everybody was excited about it. And now it's just a thing that houses have.
Yeah, and there's so many examples where it requires that passionate, you know, disruptive minority just coming out with these new ideas. And over time, as it becomes adopted, it just kind of fades into the background. And that means you win when it happens. So yes. I like your prediction there. And And maybe one more final last question, since you sort of like talked about the other decentralized protocols that are in this game. And I will direct people again to your presentation where you really talk through each one, but maybe just a super quick summary of why you think Nostr is apart from all of these others and why it will be the winner in the long term.
So I have kept track of all the different social media protocols. I have this Airtable of about 100 social media protocols. Each time I find a new one, I install it, I play with it, I look at it, I understand how it works. I am a little bit obsessed with social media protocols. And I was involved in the creation of Blue Sky. I was part of the initial committee, helped Jay with her essay, you know, exploration of social media protocols. Paul Frazee, who is the lead architect on the app proto, is a friend who I know. So I like the Blue Sky team. I was involved with it. I also was talking to Dan Romero, who made Farcaster over the years, everything else. I looked at all these protocols, and I especially looked at Blue Sky, and I could have just gone and worked on Blue Sky. Like, I could have been like, hey, you know, hire me. I'm going to work on Blue Sky. I'm not going to work on Nostr. I switched to working on Nostr because Nostr is being developed in a way that is consistent with the best internet technology that wins. We forget now that TCP/IP was the rebel protocol that the US government and the military hated. They wanted us to design the internet using this other protocol called OSI that wasn't permissionless, that wasn't open, that couldn't let you just collaborate and build stuff. And so what we have today, HTML, JavaScript, CSS, which is like super complicated and stuff, but TCP/IP, UDP, all of the things that we have in the internet, the good stuff, comes from a philosophy of building technology that is, you know, centered around the IETF, the Internet Engineering Task Force. The Internet Engineering Task Force believes in designing technology with the idea that we reject presidents, kings, and voting. We believe in rough consensus and running code. So I build on Nostr because Nostr is built on rough consensus and running code, and there is no kings, presidents, or voting in deciding how it works. Blue Sky is a wonderful project full with wonderful people, but it is open source the way Android is open source. You have the code, but you don't have a say, which means you have to ask someone else for permission to do things. I don't like asking people for permission to do things. I think the world is more innovative and more interesting where we don't have to force that accountability. And so Nostr has this massive app ecosystem and this massive developer ecosystem, many thousands of developers, hundreds and hundreds of apps, dozens and dozens of different SDKs and libraries, because you don't need to ask permission, because it is similar to TCP/IP. It is similar to HTML. It is similar to PHP and Perl. All of these things that made the internet work and made these big systems work by being small pieces loosely joined is the Unix and Linux philosophy, that we have all these systems that build up. We don't design the complicated system from the top down. We build the top complicated system out from small parts that emerge. And Nostr is designed like that. And that's why I'm building on top of Nostr. And that's why I believe in it, because Nostr is designed in the way and being built in the way that we know for the last 50 years works. It works for building the internet. It worked for building the web. It worked for building things like podcasting. And it will work for building social media apps. And that is what distinguishes it from everything else. Like DSNP and Blue Sky and Farcaster and you know, Mastodon on the Fediverse. It's like, yes, you can install your own software, but it's like a thousand little fiefdoms of homeowners associations. It's like super frustrating. You don't really control your data. Your server controls it. Nostr's not like that. Like, I don't have to ask for permission how to design Noster. You don't have to ask for permission. We all can go in there. We can provide the specs. We can run the code. We can be compliant or not compliant with a spec. It's our own choice. And that's the kind of freedom we need.
I love it. I love it. That's, I'm getting more bullish every day. Every time I think I'm not going to get more bullish, I just get more bullish. Where can people find you and the projects you are working on, sir?
What's that?
I said, where can people find you and the projects you are working on to continue down this rabbit hole that you are helping create the future?
Yeah, so my Noster app is nos.social. You know, I don't think people who are not Spanish or Portuguese speakers realize that Noster is a wordplay. Nos means us in Spanish and Portuguese. And you've got the stir from like Napster. So like Noster means us-ter. And so I named my app nos.social, us social. So you got nos.social. I also run an activist site, protest.net, which is a Noster-based activist calendar site and organizing site. And if you go to nos.social, you can find our stuff and find out about our team and our app and what we're building. It's all open source, and it's super excited about the future.
I will make sure to put those all in the show notes for people to check out. I definitely recommend you do. I scanned around your website earlier, and I need to look further into that, the nos.social. It looks really, really cool. And as we were talking about creators earlier, just how, you know, we need to get more creators on board here because it's so perfect for them in so many ways. And I can tell that that's really curated in a way that helps creators get onboarded. And that's how you have so much knowledge about their experience. So certainly going to be sending people your way. Ravel, it has been an absolute pleasure talking to you today, sir. I love your storytelling. I love the way that your mind works and the vision you have for the future based on the history you have in the space. So I'm very much looking forward to continuing to follow along and see how things play with this big, crazy world. None of us know exactly what's going to happen. That's why it's so much fun.
We don't know what's going to happen, but we get to help make it happen. Thank you so much for having me, and thank everyone for taking the time to listen. And let's go build this future together.
Absolutely. Amen. Have a good one, brother.
Yeah. Bye.